You're listening to a special Stumptown Trade Review podcast coming to you from the Emerald City Comic Con. We are here with Matt Kent. Did I get that right, Kent?
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
Fantastic. You probably know him from such works as Super Spy and Two Sisters and Three Story. So thanks a lot for sitting down with us.
Yeah, no problem.
So let's take a look with probably what you're most famous for right away, which is the Super Spy series of books. Tell us a little bit sort of how this all came to be.
I was coming off my last book, Two Sisters, and I had an idea for a few super spy stories. Not even super spy, just spy stories. And I started throwing them up online. And then I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to try to do a weekly online strip for a year and then just see if I can do it. So I did. For 52 weeks, I came up with a new story, put it up online, and was late several times, but never by more than a few days. And then I fudged a little bit. I'd have like a sketchbook week where it's like, here's some of my, you know, behind the scenes stuff or whatever, so I can, because I was sick the week before. So it just came about as more of a webcomic. And as I was going along, I realized I started to see these threads of ways I could pull it all together into a book. And then that's what happened.
So it took its origins then, I mean, directly from Two Sisters? Or was it something you were starting to feel like you really wanted to tie in? Or was that something that sort of grew organically as the process continued?
Yeah, when I did Two Sisters, I initially envisioned that I'd do a series of graphic novels that were all sort of spy-themed, and maybe the characters overlapped. And then Super Spy sort of sprung from that. And then I realized I have more than... I have 52 spy ideas. So the next book just ended up being, you know, a collection of these stories that sort of interlocked.
And then you've recently put out sort of a super spy guidebook almost that has the little clues and ins and outs that people may not know as they read it. Can you give us a clue as to kinds of things that you could find in that guidebook?
Yeah. One of the big things was I would do local shows or have an art exhibit, and I had a postcard with sort of a key code on it. And then I realized that there's some codes in the book that unless you have that card that I had at an art exhibit, you know, there's no way you'd ever be able to, I guess you could break it if you were like a code breaker.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, well, I need to have, that needs to be somewhere where somebody can figure it out a little bit easier than having to email me. So I have that. And then there's like a little pop gun. You can cut the covers off and then assemble a little pop gun that has a story. And then what else? There's like a little, a sort of a puzzle where you cut out all the panels, and then you arrange them according to this map guide, and then it tells a story. And it's like 5 feet by 5 feet if you put it all together.
Wow. So was this something, I mean, you talk about you telling these spy stories and how you were enjoying telling this, and you found you had 52 different spy stories. Is this springing from a love of spy stories that you had growing up, or an interest in, you know, Cold War spying? Where did this all come from?
Yeah, you know, it's just as simple as I loving James Bond growing up. My parents were huge fans of it, and one of my earliest memories is going to see Moonraker at the drive-in theater, which... not the best example of a spy anything by any means, but that was really formative to me growing up. But as an adult, then I'm like, well, I want a spy story that sort of satisfies my need for good story and character I care about and that kind of thing, which James Bond usually doesn't have. So then I set out to try to make a spy book that would be something I would love to see, like, you know, be excited to see on the shelf, and just put everything I love about spies in there, and the idea of sort of living a lie and then what that does to you, like, that always intrigued me. And I always bring up, I like Charlie Kaufman, and I loved how he would just build this character and become that character, and he'd go out, and it was just for, like, I don't really even know why he did that, but it was kind of for comedy, but also something else to it. And I like the idea that these people are doing kind of the same thing, but they're doing it for like a greater purpose. So that was always exciting to me too.
Cool. Now you talk about character. Your most recent piece, Three Story, is kind of a departure. I mean, it's not in the spy genre at all, but talk about a character who's larger than life physically and kind of on an emotional level. Tell us a little bit about where Three Story came from.
A couple of years ago, I was sort of there was a family get together, and I had met a second or third cousin of mine that I'd never met before. And he's like 7.5 feet tall. He's just a big guy, you know, but he lives a normal life. And he's just a big dude. And I asked my parents later, I was like, what's going on? That guy is awesome. And he's like a detective, and he's totally cool. And the origin of the giant man in Three Stories, exactly what happened to him. He had a tumor near his pituitary gland, and it just made him grow and grow and grow. He's like the biggest kid in high school. And the difference is they figured out what it was. They cut the tumor out, and he was fine. Uh-huh. You know, so he has a normal life. But driving home from that, I was like, man, what if they hadn't cut that out? What would that be like? And what would it be like if you're three stories tall? And, you know, how would you communicate? And what would that do to you? And what would your life be like? So I started to think about that. And the story sort of sprung sort of from real life.
Okay, I got to ask, because Three Story also refers to the fact that his story is told from the perspective of three women in his life, his mother, his wife, and then his daughter. What was the deal with the mother? She was just this incredibly, manipulating person. And when we did our review of it, I was just railing on her. Where did she come from?
She's based on... She's completely fictional. I'll just say that.
Yes, Mom, she's completely fictional.
But it is, a lot of her story came from my real grandmother, who met my grandfather. They got married. She got pregnant. He went overseas. He died. She was left to raise my father on her own. And so there's a kernel of that is my grandmother. She wasn't horrible. She was a great grandmother, so I don't want to give anybody the wrong idea, but that sort of was the inspiration for her, sort of her origin. But then I sort of just, I wrote it, my dad didn't grow up to be three stories tall either, right. So she, her circumstances became different, and then she sort of came from that, and I hate to say characters write themselves, because it's kind of ridiculous, they don't write themselves, I write the character, But again, it's just, I was like, I sort of tried to put myself in her position, and maybe what I would be like, I guess, no, that's not true. I wouldn't be like that either.
Yeah, because she, that was the cool thing, was that, while this is the story of the three-story man, it really was more about the impact that he had on the lives of these three women, which was really cool. Her story was just so, unique and something you don't normally see.
Yeah, I like to have female characters because there's not a lot of them in comics to begin with. Mm-hmm. And when I'm writing a female character, it automatically forces me to think differently than I normally would. If it's a male character, I tend to be like, oh, what would I do in this situation? And it sort of becomes sort of me just filtered barely. But if it's a woman, it automatically puts me on different ground. I've never had a child. I don't know what that's like, but it makes me make that character more real somehow.
Now, speaking of real, you've created some, realia, some artifacts from the book for the real world. What are some things that you've created to go along with it?
There's like this little metal capsule I have, the Giant Man mini comic, and it's a little capsule the size of a pill, so you can swallow it. I don't recommend swallowing it, but you could. You open it up, and then there's a little strip of paper in there, and it's just a tiny comic. And the story is one where you can read it either way. You read it, start on one side and read it, and flip it over to the other side, you get sort of a sad story. If you start on the other side and read it and flip it over, it has a happy ending. So it's, just a weird little thing. But it tied into the book where, without spoiling anything, the Giant Man becomes sort of a spy courier at some point, and they put little capsules in his ear, sort of curry secrets back and forth.
It was just kind of cool that, again, you have something in the story and then you've created it in the real world.
Yeah, it's fun. Too much time spent at the table thinking about what I can do. I blame that.
Or, what did you say, a Chinese restaurant in St. Louis?
Yeah, there's a restaurant in St. Louis that had those little capsules. They're like little wish make a wish capsules where you write it on a blank piece of paper and put it in there and your wish comes true or something. Yeah, I have a problem. Everywhere I go, I'm always looking at something and thinking how to, I can repurpose that to fit my own ends.
So what's next? What comes out? I mean, now that Three Stories is out, what's next?
I have a Vertigo book coming out in July called Revolver. It should be out in time for San Diego. And it's an original graphic novel, 170 pages. I just finished inking a book called The Tooth for Oni. I have like four more books coming out between now and 2012. That one's called Strange Crimes, one's called End of the World.
For 2012, right? The end of the world?
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully I get it done in time. That's my deadline. So.
Yeah, if you miss that deadline, it's all over with.
No, but my end of the world book is going to be funny because it's the most humorous book I've done. I don't know. We'll see how it turns out.
We like to wrap things up with our professionals that we talk to. We like to ask them, what is your issue? What is the comic that you have read and enjoyed and it stuck with you because it was so cool or so awesome or so over the top and you feel like you just have to share that with everybody?
Okay, this is a two-parter for me. I just thought of it. But I would say the thing that actually made me think I could actually... there's more to comics. Something that would be interesting to me was 8-Ball issue 1-3. I picked those up and I remember reading those on the way home from Chicago and just being blown away. There's like a dog that they shave and then there's a map on the dog. It's the, what was it? The velvet, like a velvet glove storyline or whatever. Craziest thing I ever read. And, still holds up. It's pretty crazy. But that's what made me think, man, I got to do comics. There's so much you can do with them. The flip side of that literally was that I met my wife. We were still dating, and she'd come over to my place, which is a total wreck, and I just have comics everywhere. And on the back, one of the back strips on the back of 8-Ball, he does like a little one-page strip, was a comic strip called Bugfucker. Or no, Little Bugfucker. You can bleep that out. I don't know how your podcast is, but
yeah,
you might have to bleep the whole rest of this part of it out. But my future wife comes over and she's like, oh, comics and everything. And the very first thing she picks up, I have a lot of stuff, a lot of Marvel, DC, great stuff. The first thing she picks up is that, and she flips it over, and she's like, what are you reading? What are you doing? I was like, it's not all like that. And while I think that is super hilarious, it's not all like that. And anyway, but we're married, and she's come to understand it. That's it.
All right, thank you very much.